My wife's away, the kids are away, I've got the whole house to myself to do whatever I please. And do you know what I'm going to do, boys and girls?
I'm going to sit in the corner and record a podcast about Christmas.
You love it! Run the theme music!
What's this? What's this?
It's the most wonderful time of the year.
What's this? What's this?
It's Christmas time.
What's this? What's this?
It's all humbug, I tell you!
What's this? What's this?
Well, just me, my trusty old Red Ryder Carbine Action 2 on the shot range model air rifle.
What is this?
It's the Total Christmas Podcast with your host, Jack.
He's an angry elf.
Hello, you beautiful people, and welcome to the Total Christmas Podcast. I'm your host, Jack. Do you want to do the interactive bit? Of course you don't. We're doing it anyway. Here we go. How are you? Okay. Yeah, just been away with the kids. Brighton. It was all right. It was all right. And scene. How was that? Something, wasn't it? So, I've got an email from Jeannie Mulligan. Now, you must remember Jeannie because I spoke to her just before Christmas last year. We talked about Christmas in Ireland. And she sent me a score for the quiz. I'll let you know what she scored later. But she also put this. There's great excitement here in Enniskerry, which is the village where she lives. The village is being all decked out in its Christmas finest. This week, there's a six-part Hallmark Christmas TV show being filmed here from next Monday for the week. And then she's put, being my Christmas crazed self, I'll be stalking it all week. So she sent me a link, and this is what it says. Mae Whitman will join Mary McDonnell and Jane Seymour in The 12 Dates of Christmas, working title, a six-episode limited series in the works for Hallmark. The series is based on the novel of the same name by Jenny Bayliss. It will make its world premiere on the network during Countdown to Christmas and will stream the next day on Hallmark Plus. Production on the limited holiday series has begun in and around Dublin, Ireland, and it also stars Julia Morris, Toby Sanderman and Nathaniel Parker. So there you go, boys and girls. A bit of pre-Christmas excitement for Jeannie, your lucky girl. Yeah, they don't film any Christmas films where I live. None at all. So Jeannie, thanks for sending that through. I'm hoping that she'll give us an update after the film is finished and she can tell us what she saw. She might have got to see Jane Seymour. I've always fancied her. Yeah, lucky girl. Other than that, I don't think I've got a massive amount to report, so let's get started with this.
Do you hear what I hear?
Do you hear what I hear?
I have a really great wife. She recently told me to get some help for my drinking, so I hired another bartender. Okay, so I'm reaching back into all of my favorite British Christmas-adjacent movies that I love. I spoke about Millions a few episodes ago, and today I am returning back to another I have mentioned before, About a Boy. Look, I love American Christmas movies, I really do. They are some of the best. But these English films can also deliver on the feels. They are usually touching and will strike an emotional chord, kind of like that Heathrow scene in Love Actually. In About a Boy, Hugh Grant plays Will, who grudgingly befriends a geeky preteen boy named Marcus, whose mother he meets through a single parents group. Now, while it may sound awkward, this movie is funny, insightful, and surprisingly festive. In fact, there's one scene where the two first begin to connect after Will views Marcus being bullied. They are sitting in his home when Marcus asks Will, "Where'd you get those trainers?" Now, it's a cute moment, but it also has "Do you hear what I hear?" significance, because all of the US viewers at this point are wondering, where are the personal fitness instructors he is mentioning? Because that's what we consider a trainer, a person who advises you on physical activities, not your shoes. For the Brits, athletic shoes are called trainers, while in the States, we mostly use the term sneaker. We Americans, we use sneakers broadly to describe all sorts of athletic shoes, running shoes, tennis shoes, gym shoes, and so on. But what is funny is that although sneakers is most commonly used in the US now, the term originated in the UK in the mid-19th century. During the 1830s, the soles of shoes began to be made from rubber manufactured in the Liverpool Rubber Factory. By 1884, the rubber soles started to be used in sports shoes. These rubber-soled shoes became known as sneaks, in homage to the burglars and thieves who would use them frequently because the rubber bottoms made little noise when one was running or walking. The term sneaks later morphed into the word sneakers, which then jumped the pond at some point. The earliest known use of trainer, short for training shoe, in England was in the 1940s. However, the term became popular in 1968 when it was commonly used to describe a style of shoes made by Gola, the British sportswear company. The word later became generic in nature and was used to describe all kinds of sports footwear. The appeal of the term grew when trainers became an important part of punk and hip-hop cultures. In the 1970s, trainers were regularly worn by the Ramones and the Sex Pistols. This connected the use of the term trainers to a younger and more global customer base. In the 1980s, trainers could be seen everywhere, and by the 1990s, they became the everyday footwear choice for most people. Now, the popularity of this style of footwear, it grew in the States as well, especially with the advent of Air Jordans. But we still kept that catch-all term sneakers, or kicks maybe, but never trainers. In fact, if you want to startle your American friends, tell them that you have a favorite pair of trainers that you like to keep for special occasions and that they are so good they massage your feet. The Yanks will be excited to meet them. Cheers and happy Christmas.
You know, Bob never fails to impress, does he? Great research there, Bob. It's funny, when I was at school, maybe 40 years ago, yeah, that's how old I am, one of my mates used to refer to them as sneakers, and he sort of always has. And I don't know why, because everyone else calls them trainers. Yeah, so there you go. But yeah, here in the UK, hardly anyone, apart from that one mate of mine, calls them sneakers. Everyone else trainers. Yeah. Great work, Bob. He's going to be back in a bit. But now, boys and girls, we're doing this.
Humbug.
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 Bah humbug.
It's all humbug, I tell you.
Christmas a humbug, Uncle. Oh, you don't mean that, surely.
Boys and girls, this episode's version of A Christmas Carol is called Miss Scrooge, and it's from 1997. Now, I believe that this is a Hallmark original, although I could be wrong, and it stars Cecily Tyson as Miss Scrooge, or Ebenezer Scrooge. Yeah, not Ebenezer, Ebenezer. A little bit about Cecily Tyson. She was born in 1924, so she's 73 when she's playing Scrooge here, when really she could have been retired at that age if she wanted to be, but clearly she didn't want to be. She's been in loads of films over the years. She played Harriet Tubman in a TV miniseries, and she was also in, more recently, The Help, and she was in Fried Green Tomatoes at the Whistle Stop Cafe, which I really enjoyed when I watched it years ago. Yeah, she plays Ebenezer Scrooge, and she does a pretty decent job of it. Now, this is a modern day retelling, so I'm going to run through how it goes. It starts off, we got some kids sliding on the ice, and then this one kid finds a quarter on the ground, right? He's just about to pick it up, and this foot comes down and stamps on it, and he looks up and runs off. And it's obviously our introduction to Scrooge as the camera pans up. Now, the only problem I had with this, right, was the kid sees the quarter, looks around him before he reaches down, and then the foot comes down on it. Now, I don't know how fast old Ebenezer Scrooge can run, but it would have had to have been lightning to get her foot down before he went to pick it up. He would have seen her coming. So I don't know why the director didn't just say, see the coin, look at it, go and pick it up. Don't look around, because if you look around, you'll see Ebenezer Scrooge. That was a minor thing, and I only really thought about that after I'd watched it like for the second time. Anyway, let's move on from that. Then we got some bloke running through the streets, and it looks like he's in a bit of a rush. It turns out later that that's Bob Cratchit, and he's running late. And then it cuts to Scrooge. She's walking along, and there's a bloke dressed as Santa Claus collecting money, and his name's Sam. It turns out he's a banker, and she has a bit of a chat to him. Nothing major, just sort of like, you know, minor pleasantries, although she's a bit rude to him, but Sam's polite to her. And then she goes in her company, which is like a buildings and loan type business. Like in It's a Wonderful Life, I suppose. She's at work now, and she's got two other employees in the office. So it's not just Cratchit, who still hasn't turned up yet. He's that late. But there's this lady at the counter, and she's trying to borrow some money with a lamp that she's got, which is like an antique, because the lady wants to pay the bail for her son to get him out in time for Christmas. And she needs $100, and Scrooge offers her $40. And she said, well, you could take it to a pawn shop, but the pawn shop's offered her even less. So she takes the $40. I don't know where she's going to get the other $60 from. Good luck with that. And then we get this family come in and they're getting evicted, and it's the day before Christmas, and Ebonita's like, we need you out because we're going to redecorate before we put the new people in. And the husband's really upset and he's getting a bit angry, but you know, his wife just drags him out and Scrooge isn't very nice to him. So then Cratchit turns up and we find out that Cratchit actually owes Scrooge. He's got a debt to her because when she found him, or she first met him, he was a drunk. And she lent him some money and gave him a job, so sort of helping him, but he's still paying off the debt. He's been working for her 10 years now, so it must be a pretty big loan that she gave him. And Cratchit asks if there's any chance they could get a health plan, and Scrooge, of course, says no. Then there's an interesting bit. After Cratchit's been chatting to Scrooge, the three workers are in the office trying to eat biscuits, just very, very... Let me play it for you. Have a listen to this.
You got to learn to chew without moving your mouth in this place.
Yeah, I found that funny, them trying to eat biscuits quietly so Scrooge couldn't hear them. So while the workers are talking, they mention that Scrooge has got a vault in our office and no one's allowed to go in it at all. Now, it used to be Marley's vault, but now it's Scrooge's vault and no one ever goes in there at all. And we also find out that Marley died 10 years ago, not 7, like in the book, they went 10. Go big or go home, they say. So that vault, we'll come back to that later. So then it cuts to a bunch of kids singing Good King Wenceslas, and there's a preacher with him. It turns out the preacher is Nephew Fred. Yeah. And he invites Ebonita around for Christmas dinner, and of course she says no. At this point, let me talk a bit about Cicely Tyson as Ebonita. I think she does a good job, you know, she's pretty miserly the way she behaves, but she barely moves her mouth at all when she's talking. And it affects her voice quite a lot. I mean, you can hear what she's saying, but she's got like this scratchy voice. It seems a bit weird that she barely moves her mouth, the way she talks. Yeah, something I just noticed. Anyway, so now it's time for the workers to go home, Cratchit and the other two, Edna and I think the other one's called Anne. And she gives them a day off, but then she says this. Have a listen.
And to make up for that totally lost day after Christmas, I want Edna and Annie in 1 hour earlier, you to stay 1 hour later. All week.
Yeah. Which is interesting, I thought. So it's like, even though she's given them the day off, in the book, it's like, okay, you can have the day off, I'm not happy about it. In this one, you get the day off, but you're working extra hours to make up for it. Then, Scrooge is going home, and there's a little boy shoveling her pathway in front of her house, and they have this interaction.
Did I ask you to do this?
No, ma'am.
Well, I suppose you'll expect me to feel guilty about not paying you for something I didn't ask you to do in the first place.
Merry Christmas.
Garbage.
Yeah, I quite like that, actually. When she says garbage at the end there, that's sort of what she says instead of humbug, but she only says it a couple of times, not like some versions where Scrooge is saying humbug left, right and centre. In this one, it's just a couple of times. As she's going into her house, she doesn't have a door knocker. She has like a pane of glass and Marley's face appears in that. And she's like, oh my goodness, there's Marley's face. Then she goes around her house and she puts a lot of coins in these little mechanical toy boxes. They sort of look like they're from Victorian times almost, you know, where you put some money in and it sort of sets a gear going and a hand comes out and grabs it or something happens. She's got a load of those, she's putting money in, and then she's got a lot of dollar bills, or they might be fives and tens, I don't know, but she's ironing them. She's actually got an iron and she's smoothing them out. And then who should turn up but of course Marley. Now her name isn't Jacob Marley, it's a lady. It's not Jacob Marley, it's Maud Marley. Yeah, now you might know her because she's a very famous actress called Catherine Helmond. Now in the UK she's not that famous, but in the States you'd probably know her from Who's the Boss. Yeah, now in the UK we had a show called The Upper Hand, which was like an English version of Who's the Boss, where instead of it being, I think Tony Danza was a baseball player, was he? In our version it was a football player that became like the kid's nanny. Anyway, that's Catherine Helmond and she plays Maud Marley. Then when she's talking, she doesn't really seem that repentant. She seems more interested in trying to save herself. Like if Scrooge changes, then she'll be set free. Have a listen, see what she says.
Now I'll cut to the chase. I actually need your help to rest in peace. See, that's all anybody ever talks about in the afterlife. How they do things differently, the grass is forever greener. But when I was alive, I lived by one question only. What's in it for me? I'll admit, I was a little self-centered then. Cared not a whit for the little people.
Yeah, do you see what I mean? Yeah. And then she says, the ghosts are going to turn up on the hour, which I don't know if you remember the last episode, but I was saying, like, it was, I like the last version I covered because Marley said they're going to come the following 3 nights, whereas in this one it's like, nah, they're going to be in and out, you get 1 an hour and that's it. So Marley's left and Scrooge is like, well, hang on a minute, I don't really want to be here when those ghosts turn up, so I know what I'm going to do. And she takes her cat, she's got a pet cat, she takes her cat and she goes off back to her savings and loan and locks herself in the vault. Yeah, so she's going to be safe there. Well, you'd think, she's not. Now, there's a chair in the vault. I don't know if she moved the chair from her office into the vault, or the chair's always been there. I don't know why you'd need a chair in your vault, but there's one there. And she goes to sleep on the chair, and then she's woken up by the Ghost of Christmas Past. Now, the Ghost of Christmas Past is a bloke in a white suit. He's got cobwebs on him as well, but that's it. And it flashes back to when she was a kid, and she gets a puppy for Christmas, and she's got a really happy family, and her dad's there. Now, he was an army vet, I'm guessing from World War II. He wants to start his own grocery store with a couple of his mates, but then sadly, as the scenes progress, his friends back out. And I think the point is, because they're black, they're worried that people won't support the business, or people don't think they should have their own business back then. And his friends back out, and then the building that he's been working on gets burnt to the ground, and the dad rushes in to try and save the building, which is really foolish because the fire brigade are already there. I don't know what he's rushing in for, like if he's going to try and put it out or if he wants to grab something, I don't know, but there's a big explosion and the dad dies. Yeah. And then we find out they had to sell their house to pay the debts, and then it moves on and to a point where the mum's passed away. Her brother, whose name was Perry, has joined the army and he's gone to Vietnam. And Ebonita, she moves off to this town called Providence up north because originally she was down in the south. And I've got to say, when she's there, this is during the Vietnam War, so it'll be set in the 60s. It don't look like it's set in the 60s, judging by the vehicles and everything. But it's only a short scene, so we'd ignore it, won't we? Of course we ain't got much choice. And then it cuts to this interview that Scrooge is having with Maud Marley. And she gets the job because Scrooge says that her brother used to call her Stingy Mingy. And she gets started on minimum wage. Then, as she's leaving her interview, she meets Stephen, who's a lawyer. So he's like the love interest, the Belle type character. And she gets promoted to head bookkeeper. But then when she goes out to tell Stephen about it, and they go for a meal, Stephen tells her that he wants to move back down to the south of the States. He's not sure where, but that's just where he wants to go because he wants to sort of help with the civil rights movement that's going on down there because he's a lawyer. Scrooge ain't interested. She wants to stay where she is because she's just got a big promotion. And that's pretty much the end of the Christmas Past scene, is her and him splitting up. So then Scrooge wakes up in the vault, and I looked at the clock and only 20 minutes had passed. And she's like, well, it looks like the ghosts can get me here, so I might as well go home again. So she goes home and she's feeding the cat in the middle of the night. I don't think the cat needs to eat in the middle of the night. Surely you fed him before bedtime. Anyway, the ghost of present turns up and he's an English guy and he's just a bloke again. Just a bloke. Nothing special about him. Not like wearing a Christmassy robe. He doesn't look festive at all, actually, the way he's dressed. He's just wearing a suit or clothes. Anyway, he takes her outside and there's a bunch of kids skidding on the ice and Bob Cratchit's out there, and I've got a feeling this was meant to be the day before rather than actual Christmas Day, this little bit of it, because the ghost says something like, are you even interested in why Bob was 15 minutes late yesterday? And it cuts back to the kids skating on the ice and Bob's there with Tiny Tim. Obviously Tim can't skate on the ice, so Bob puts Tim on his shoulders and he slides on the ice with Tim on his shoulders. Now, not being funny, right? Sliding on ice is tricky enough as it is, but sliding on ice with someone else on your shoulders, that's going to completely mess up where your centre of gravity is, and you're going to be falling on your ass. And with a kid on top of it, that kid's got a long way to fall down. Not a wise move, to be honest, Bob. Not a wise move, mate. And in fact, Scrooge notices that Tim's got a crutch, and she says, if he's not careful, he's going to break his other leg. And the ghost tells her that he hasn't actually broken his leg. He's got a slow-growing congenital tumour, which is why he has a limp. And it turns out that Bob doesn't earn enough money to pay the medical bills for Tim to have an operation, but he sadly earns too much to get help from some of the agencies that support people that can't afford medical bills. So yeah, he's in a bit of a bind there. Then we get the Cratchit family all sat round, and in essence, this is very similar to the book, I thought. You know, they're a happy family. Quite often, versions will show Cratchit and his family like just starving to death in a freezing cold place, but this one showed that they're a happy family and they've got love, which I thought was really nice. Then we cut to the family we saw earlier, the ones that were being evicted, and they are now living in the school gym. Yeah, word got round that they've been evicted, so the PTA opened up the gym and let them move in there, and they've got all their stuff in this gym, yeah, on the basketball court there. And then we cut to the church where her nephew Luke is preaching, and he tells the story of the long spoons, what's sometimes called the allegory of the long spoons. Now, I don't know if you're familiar with this story, but it's one I remember from when I was a kid. And it originally came from Rabbi Haim of Ramshishok. And I'll tell you the story now, if you've never heard it. So the deal is this. I'll tell it in my own words, so make of this what you will. So there's two geezers, right? Now, one comes from heaven and one comes from hell. And they're having a chat. And the one from heaven's like, so what's it like down in hell? And the one in hell's like, it's awful. We are constantly starving. And there are huge piles of food, all the most wonderful food you could ever imagine, stacked up on tables in front of us. And we can have as much as we want, but we're only allowed to use these huge spoons. And the spoons are so long that you can reach the food with the spoon, but you can't get it in your mouth. There's no way to turn the spoon around. It's just too long. And so the devil just stands there laughing at us, and all of us are starving all the time with all this food in front of us. And then the guy from hell says, so what's it like in heaven? And the guy in heaven says, it's fantastic. It's the same. We have piles and piles of food, all the most wonderful food you could ever imagine. And we have the long spoons as well. But we all stand there and we feed each other. So that's the story. I don't know if you're familiar with it, but you know it now. And Luke tells that. And then we cut to the Ghost of Christmas Yet to Come. So the Ghost of Christmas Yet to Come looks a lot like Emo Phillips, to be honest. Do you remember him? He was a comedian, a Canadian comedian, I think. Maybe not, I don't know. He was a comedian anyway. Anyway, the Ghost of Christmas Yet to Come looks like him. He doesn't speak at all, which I thought was good, because I could have had him talking. And the first scene we get is Luke round at the Cratchits, and Tiny Tim's there, laying there, not doing too well. And Tim mentions that his dad doesn't have a job anymore because he took time off when Tim got really ill, and so he was sacked by Scrooge. So Luke goes to see his auntie Scrooge, and this I thought was interesting because most versions of A Christmas Carol, Scrooge never sees himself or herself in the future. They see people talking about them, but they never actually see themselves. So she stood there and watching herself in the future talking to Luke, which, yeah, I thought that was an interesting one. They have this big argument where Luke's like, how could you sack him, you know, he's got this poor child, and she's like, oh, don't tell me to run my business. And as they're arguing, she sort of has a bit of a very mild turn, and she has to sort of sit down and have a sip of water, and Luke's like, okay, I'll leave, and he walks off. And then one of the other employees, Edna, I think it is, she comes in, she's got a lot of receipts, and she's like, oh, do you want me to put them in the vault? And Scrooge goes, you know you're not allowed to go in that vault. So she's like, okay, I'll leave them on your desk. And then Scrooge goes into the vault to put the receipts, and she collapses in there. And Edna, she's sort of stood outside, and she knows that Scrooge is in the vault, and she's like, I'm not allowed in the vault. Oh, and she sort of just creeps off and leaves. And Scrooge dies there in the vault. And then we cut to a lot of blokes just wheeling all this paperwork and all this money out of the offices. And it turns out that because she didn't have a will, the whole business, after like probate and everything, all the money is going to end up going to the IRS. So all this money she's worked so hard for is just lost and gone, just like she is. And then we see her funeral, and the only people there are Luke and his wife, and then Cratchit turns up, late as usual actually. That's pretty much that. And then it cuts to Tim's deathbed and him dying. And then Scrooge wakes up in bed. Yeah, there you go. So then we get the redemption bit at the end. She gets up and she looks out. And the boy in the street is the same one that was shoveling her drive the night before. You remember when she wouldn't give him any money? And they say this.
What day is it?
It's Christmas Day.
Christmas Day? Really? Are you sure?
Of course I'm sure.
You stay right where you are.
And she sends him off for this turkey. And while he's gone, she gets all dressed up. And she looks very nice, actually. And the boy comes back with his £24 turkey. And she sends him off in a taxi to deliver it and gives him a lot of cash as well. Then she goes to the office and leaves bonuses for her staff. And then she takes back the lamp. Do you remember the lamp that the lady wanted some money for? She takes that back to the lady and said, I can't take your lamp. Keep it. I don't want the money for it either. This is yours. And what I thought was disappointing was we didn't see her do anything for the family that she'd evicted on Christmas. Because I think evicting someone on Christmas Eve is a lot worse than giving someone 40 quid for a lamp that's worth a lot more. Really. And they never showed that lady with the lamp in between, but they did show the evicted family in between. So I feel like they could have done something with that. It would have been easy. Just turn up at the gym and say, yeah, here's some cash and I've got a flat you can stay at. But she didn't do that. They didn't. So, you know. Anyway, then she bumps into Sam. Do you remember the old guy I said about? It was like a banker that was dressed as Father Christmas, collecting money. Well, now he's got like an outdoor soup kitchen and he's feeding the homeless people. And so she gets over and she helps. And then she talks about helping the homeless to Sam. She gives him a massive wad of money and says, look, see what we can do. Go and get more food for them. Go and get clothes for them. I'll help with the soup kitchen. And she even offers to use her office as a shelter until they find something more permanent. And then there's a homeless lady there who's like looking a bit nervous and sort of standing back, just like, you know, getting ready for some food or whatever. And Scrooge, she's got like a big long spoon and she sort of feeds the homeless lady to her mouth, which I thought was, you know, a flashback to the allegory of the long spoons. Then she goes to Cratchit's house and, of course, gives him a raise and a promotion, and she's going to pay Tim's medical bills, and also she's going to get a health plan for her workers, so that's wonderful. And she gives presents to the kids, and they each get one of those mechanical money boxes that I told you about. Yeah, and they're all playing with their money boxes, which I thought was kind of cool. And she gives Tiny Tim a dog. Now, I don't know if you know this, boys and girls, but a dog is for life, not just for Christmas. Now, I know back in the Ghost of Christmas Past segment, she was getting a pet dog for Christmas and she was very happy about that. I don't care. I don't think giving a dog for Christmas is a good idea unless you're giving yourself a dog for Christmas and you've always wanted a dog. Yeah. Anyway, and then we get a bit of a sing-song where Cratchit's wife is singing and his daughter's on the piano and his son is playing violin. And then she goes off to the church and stands next to Luke's wife and daughter in the church as they all sing Go Tell It on the Mountain. And that's how it ends. Yeah. All in all, I was familiar with this version. I don't know how long I've been familiar with this version, knowing it was out there. But I'd never watched it all the way through until this time. But I know it's been on TV loads of times. And I'm wondering how far back it goes. Because it's, what, 28 years old now? And I'm wondering, did I watch it back in the 90s? Or was I aware of it back then? I don't know. Anyway, I finally got around to watching it. And it was all right. I mean, it was a Hallmark movie, so you've got to expect that. There's a few things that I felt like they didn't quite get right. But generally, I thought it was all right. I think I'm biased, just because I love A Christmas Carol so much, though. Anyway, if you want to check it out, the whole thing's on YouTube. You can watch it on there. So that's Miss Scrooge. Now let's do this.
This is the Total Christmas Podcast. Listen up, Jackass.
Boys and girls, this is an interesting one because I haven't actually been sent a question as such. It's a question for you guys to help with. So I hope you will actually email me with some suggestions here. Let me read out the email I received. Now, this comes from Rob Taylor, and he's emailed me a lot of times in the past, and he says, as you know, I am a long-time listener to your wonderful festive podcast. I'm currently undertaking a charity walk where I am attempting to walk the equivalent distance of London to Rome for the charity Prostate Cancer UK. What I am asking is whether or not you are able to give a couple of minutes of your Christmas podcast for listeners to come back to me. So this is what I'm doing right now, as I am also looking to do a fundraiser for prostate cancer this Christmas. The only problem is I don't know what to do as the Christmas fundraiser. A quiz is good. It's annoying that he said that, actually, because that was my first thought. I thought, do a massive quiz, charge an entry fee, do all the questions about Christmas. He could even nick them from previous shows of mine. That's an easy way to get your questions. But anyway, this is what he says. A quiz is good, and I know people love a quiz, but I want something different. As a heads up, I live in a small Dorset town. Dorset is it's sort of in the west country of the UK, probably about 100 miles from London, and it's more of a rural county. It's got some cities in it. Bournemouth is, I think, the county town of Dorset. I could be wrong. So as a heads up, I live in a small Dorset town, so to do anything huge isn't always welcomed by the townsfolk. Anyway, I don't know if you can help, but if you can, I'd really appreciate it. And then he's given me a link to his GoFundMe page, and I'll put that link in the show notes. So if you want to give some money to Rob, it's a good cause, Prostate Cancer UK. Of course, if you're not in the UK, you'd be thinking, why am I giving money to someone in a completely different country? You know, but anyway, if you want to, you can. I'll put the link in the show notes. But here's the thing, boys and girls. We've got a fellow listener. You're a listener, he's a listener. You've got so much in common. Maybe, just maybe, you could come up with a nice idea of a good way to raise money at Christmas. Tell you what, I've got an idea, actually. This is my one, you can't steal it. Carol singing. I bet you could get a few mates together, Rob, and go carol singing around your town. I did it years ago with a bunch of mates. I don't know if I ever talked about this before. I hope I haven't. But I did it years ago. A bunch of us did. We were like 17, 18. We went out. We did all right, actually. Didn't raise a fortune, but we had a laugh doing it. Yeah. So maybe that's an idea. You know, that's one thing. If you're listening and you've got an idea, email it to me and I'll forward it on to Rob. It's not a lot to ask, kids. It's not a lot to ask at all. Now, I know there's three of you out there, so at least one of you, I want you to email me and say, how about this as a good way to raise money at Christmas? Now, don't forget, kids, you know, Christmas in the UK is winter, gets a bit nippy, a bit cold, so I don't know what to suggest as outdoor activities might not work the best. But, Rob, don't forget, a quiz is a good idea still. You know, you don't want to forget that one completely. But anyway, if you've got any ideas of how Rob can raise some money, then email me and I'll send them on to him. That email, boys and girls, as I'm sure you know, is totalchristmas@gmail.com. And Rob, I want to say best of luck, buddy. Now let's do this. This is the quiz, this is the quiz, this is the quiz, this is the quiz. So boys and girls, I'm doing something a little bit different with the quiz this week. I know I said I'd be starting the new quiz from the new book because, do you remember, I'd used up all the questions in my old book. Well, because we've got a crossover period, I'm doing something a bit different. But before we get into that, I've got to read out the scores from last episode. So, with a measly... Do you remember I said I want to get some emails from people that have never emailed in before? Well, I did. I got, I believe, three. Three names that I didn't recognise. The first two I didn't recognise, I don't think. Maybe I did. If you have emailed me before and I've forgotten, that's rude of me. But with 4 points, a measly staggering 4 points, we have Angela Moss and Joseph Wojciechowski. Hope I said that right, Joseph. They both scored 4. Well done to you two for sending in your score, because don't forget, I got 10. Yeah, that's right. So well done for sending that in and being proud. I'm proud of you for standing up and saying, this is who I am. This is what I've scored. With 5 points, we have Guy Sawyer, John Gomez and Jeannie Mulligan. I think that's 4 times on the bounce she's got 5 questions right. Can you believe that? Yeah, 5. 4 times. Fantastic work, Jeannie. Of course, we heard from Jeannie earlier. Well done for getting 5, Jeannie. Well, not well done. You got 5. It's rubbish. Well, it's not rubbish. It's half. You got half. With 6 points, we have Benji Pearson, Mary Pulte, Martin Goodman, who frequently beats me, or at least scores the same as me. He only got 6 this time. No idea what's going on there. And Lance Garman. Yeah, they all got 6. With 7 points, we have Jack Unverthurf. With 8 points, Lauren Morley. And with 9 points, Adam Parker from the Merry Britsmas podcast and Mickey Mike Westphal from the Advent Calendar House. They both scored 9. And do you know what? Mike Westphal said it was the Robin and the Seven Hoods question that he didn't get. I wouldn't be surprised if that was the one Adam didn't get either. And with 9.9, there's no way he scored 9.9. I shouldn't let you score your own points. I should get you to post them to me and I'll mark them myself. Was Brighton Rock, who I think is just trying to bait me. But yeah, I scored 10. So I'm going to be a little bit smug about that because I've been disappointed with people beating me in the past. Anyway, now boys and girls, something a bit different. In the last episode, I used up all the questions, or at least all the questions that I could use from my quiz book, and I said I'd be moving on to a different book this episode. I lied, kids. I lied. What I'm going to do instead is do Santa Banter. Now, I don't know if you remember Santa Banter. I did it last year, once, only once, because I got complaints from Pamela Wootton, and it's a quiz of sorts. You got to work out the answers, so therefore it is a quiz. But I'd recorded this before Christmas when I chatted to Scott Newman from Tinsel Tunes, and I never used it. I was waiting for the right moment, and I think today is the right moment. So we're going to do Santa Banter. Now, I'm going to give you an example. This is the same example that I give Scott later on. I'm going to give you the clue, you have to work out what the rhyme is. So the clue is, one of Santa's reindeer is going to be sick, and the answer is, Comet is going to vomit. So you've just got to work out what the rhyme is. The answer always rhymes. It's very simple. Have fun. Enjoy yourself. Even you, Pamela Wootton. Okay, question number one. A large piece of wood you would find in your fire is taking a healthy run. Okay, did you get that? Piece of wood from the fire, taking a healthy run. Don't forget, this is a Christmas quiz. Okay, question number two. Father Christmas is hurling a block you might build a house with. Father Christmas hurling a block you might build a house with. Number three. One of the animals that helps Santa fly his sleigh, especially on a foggy Christmas Eve, is starting to cry. Yeah? Yeah. Okay, next one. Do you know what? If you're having trouble working these out, by all means, pause the podcast. I don't have a problem with that. As long as you start it up again, be nice. Number whatever. A New York cop in the film Die Hard has a limp and is using a stick to help him move. Simple, isn't it? Or isn't it? I don't know. Next one. Donald's uncle is in a small lorry. Yeah? Cartoon Donald. He's in a cartoon. You know who he is. Okay, next one. These kings that went to visit baby Jesus are using a writing implement. Okay? These kings. Another name for them. Okay. Next one. Easy one. Baby Jesus' mummy needs to shave her legs. What's that one? Next one, here it comes. This festive treat, mainly eaten in the UK, is looking very dapper in his neckwear. He's looking very dapper. That festive treat we eat in the UK. Oh, we're up to number nine now. Easy one, another easy one. The place where Santa lives has just kicked a ball between the posts. Easy, wasn't it? And the final one. This chap who came to life thanks to a magic hat appears to be holding a skillet of some kind. There you go. Those were your 10 clues. Now here's the deal. I'm just about to play you the answers and it's me and Scott chatting and I think I lead into it pretty much explaining the whole game again. Don't let that bother you. It's only a few seconds of your life. You can get beyond that. To me and Scott working our way through the answers. Okay? I'll leave these other guys to it. Off you go, Jack and Scott. Do your thing. Boys and girls, due to popular demand, I got complaints about this segment last time I did it. So that's why I've only done it once. But we're doing it again because I've got my mate Scott here and we're enjoying chatting and we're going to do it. This is Santa Banter. Now, I'm going to give you an example of how this works. So I would say one of Santa's reindeer is about to be sick. And the rhyme for that would be, Scott?
It would be, Comet is going to vomit.
There you go. See, that would have scored you a point.
But I only knew that because you just reminded me of it just a little while ago. I didn't remember. In fact, I didn't even remember that you did this segment, so it sure wasn't me that complained.
No, it was Pamela Wootton. But she likes hearing her name, so...
Pamela Wootton?
Pamela Wootton.
Pamela Wootton is the best.
She is the best. She's great. She likes hearing her name. Pamela Wootton. But... you are up for this. We're going to do it, whether you like it or not, kids. Right, here we go. Number one, a large piece of wood you would have in your fire is taking a run. It's gone for a run. A healthy run.
A log on a jog.
Expand on the type of log.
A Yule log on a jog.
The Yule log is going for a jog. Well done. See, you scored already. Here we go. Father Christmas is hurling a block that you might use to build a house with.
Okay, the block is probably a brick, but it's Father Christmas. Santa, Father Christmas. Oh, Saint Nick with a brick.
Well, he's hurling it.
Saint Nick throwing a brick. What, to hurl is to throw, right?
It is. It's actually old Saint Nick, but I'll let you have that. But well done. Well done. Okay. Oh, this is not an easy one. Okay. One of the animals that helps Santa fly his sleigh, particularly on a foggy Christmas Eve, is starting to cry.
Okay. So the reindeer, the foggy one, it would have been Rudolph, but starting to cry? Rudolph.
You might need his full title for this.
Rudolph
one, Scott.
The Red-Nosed Reindeer. Nothing rhymes with reindeer. Tear. Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer is shedding a tear.
It's exact. Okay. Well done, Scott. Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer shedding a tear. Okay, next one. A New York cop in the film Die Hard has a limp and he's using a stick to help him move.
Okay, the stick to help him move would be a cane, but I don't remember the name of the cop in Die Hard. I know it was the guy from Family Matters, Reginald Bell Johnson, but...
I know who he is, Scott. Yeah, There's only one New York cop in it.
Yeah, this is called working out the answer, Jack. I'm trying to remember the name of the cop in the movie. I know the actor who played him was Reginald Bell Johnson.
No, you don't, Scott. No, you don't. He's not a New York cop, is he?
Oh. Wait, no, but
he's
is
not
a
New York cop, is he?
The guy?
He's not a New York cop.
Oh, because he was an L.A. cop. I see. Ah. Well, listen, I'm just here to make everybody else feel smarter about themselves. All right, so let's see. That was John McClane. Using a cane?
Walking with a cane. I'll let you have it. Well done. Okay.
Phew.
Right, well, dear, you're going to get all of these because I'm helping you. Okay, oof. Next one. Donald's uncle is in a lorry, a small lorry.
Donald's uncle. Let's see. Donald's Christmas. A duck.
Yep.
A duck. I'm thinking like Uncle Scrooge was the name of the... Scrooge McDuck. That's who it was. Scrooge McDuck is in a truck.
Driving a truck. I'll let you have it. Well done.
Good thing I said McDuck out loud because I was thinking Scrooge, Spooge. I just couldn't come up with it.
Next one. These kings that went to visit baby Jesus are using a writing implement.
Okay, let's see. They were three kings. They were magi. Imagine. Writing implement. Pen, pencil, quill.
Yeah, Major.
Okay, all right. Give me the clue again.
The kings that went to visit baby Jesus are using a writing implement.
Was it with the name of one of them? Because it was like Balthazar. And nope. Okay, so, I have no idea. I give up.
No.
No.
When I give you the first part, you'll get it.
Okay.
Three wise men
using a pen.
Yeah.
Writing with a pen. Seems easy.
Shame.
Seems easy looking back.
Baby Jesus's mummy needs to shave her legs.
Mary is hairy.
It's Virgin. The Virgin Mary is hairy, but I'll let you have it.
The Virgin Mary is hairy. Wow. I think a lightning is going to strike me for saying that out loud. That's awful.
Okay. This festive treat, mainly eaten in the UK.
Mince pie.
Is looking very dapper with his neckwear.
Mince pie is looking fly?
No, it's neckwear.
Oh, tie. No, mince pie wearing a tie.
Yeah, it was very dapper.
Mince pie wearing a bow tie.
When you get it, it's like, of course, it's just so...
What is it?
Yeah, that was it. You got it exactly, yeah.
Oh, it was? Oh, why are you laughing?
Because I love the look on your face when you get it. It's like, of course.
Mince pie
wearing a bow tie. Yeah. It's the delivery. Yeah. Okay, next one. The place where Santa lives has just kicked a ball between the posts.
The North Pole scored a goal?
Scoring a goal, correct. Well done. Okay, and the last one. This chap who came to life thanks to a magic hat appears to be holding a skillet of some kind.
Frosty the Snowman is holding a frying pan?
Frosty the Snowman with a frying pan.
Okay.
Well done. We're going to give you 9 for that, Scott. You proud of yourself?
I think I got 8, but okay, I'll take the 8? 9.
Yeah, I thought
I missed 2, I thought.
You got the wise men one, and that was it, wasn't it?
I missed the wise men one.
I had to help quite a bit with the old John McClane one, because you were thinking of old Reginald Bell Johnson.
Yeah, that's true. I was way, way off on that. But aren't you impressed that I knew Reginald Bell Johnson was the name of the actor who played the cop that was on the radio? You should absolutely. Somebody out there is like, wow, that Scott is so smart.
It's the guy at Family Matters. He's Urkel's neighbor or something.
Yeah.
We didn't even get that in the UK. How do I know that?
I don't know. Your head is full of all sorts of stuff that doesn't make a lot of sense. Whatever.
Yeah. There's some weird old crap in there. Thank you for that, Scott. I enjoyed that. I really did. No matter what Pamela Wotton thought of it.
That was a lot of fun, and the last time I did that, I did terribly. This one, not a bad showing. So between this and the quiz, I'm retiring from the Total Christmas Podcast. I'm going out on top.
Oh, don't say that. We'll see you next year, won't we?
Yeah, of course you will. I got nothing else going on.
Plug those podcasts, Scott.
Tinsel Tunes is the music podcast I do, and Christmas Morning is the podcast that I do with my buddy Bran. So check out one of those.
Yep, check them out, boys and girls. They're excellent. Thanks for coming on again, Scott.
Thank you, Jack. Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas.
Where are you, Christmas?
Where are you, Christmas? How about Cleveland, Ohio? A visit to Northeast Ohio is perfect for any Christmas cinephile. First, head to 3159 West 11th Street. This is where the House from A Christmas Story is located. I mean, the actual house that was prominently featured in the 1983 movie. It was originally selected because of its simple, mundane, 1940s look, but it now has instant recognition. The home is open year-round, and it's a museum dedicated to the film's legacy. It still has the iconic leg lamp sitting right in the front window. The interior of the house has been completely remodeled to be an exact replica of the home in the film, and visitors who have been there say this is more fun than you might imagine. You can walk through the site, tasting the soap that Ralphie washed his mouth out with, or firing a BB gun in the backyard. The museum also features a number of the movie props, such as little brother Randy's snowsuit and all the toys from the Higbee's department store window at the start of the film. If that is not enough Christmas movie nostalgia for you, you can also visit the Castle Noel in Medina, Ohio, which is only 30 minutes away. Castle Noel is America's indoor, year-round Christmas entertainment attraction. It houses the world's largest collection of Hollywood Christmas movie props and costumes. This includes items from the movies like Elf, Santa Claus the Movie, and The Grinch. Plus, they have an international collection of decorated Christmas windows on display from stores including Bloomingdale's, Saks Fifth Avenue, and Macy's. You can also go down the slide from A Christmas Story. You can get up close to Cousin Eddie's rusty RV from Christmas Vacation. And you can see Edmund Gwynn's original Santa suit from 1947's Miracle on 34th Street. They also have a giant Toyland area called I Had That and filled with thousands of vintage toys from the 1950s through the 1980s, including Easy Bake Ovens and thousands of Hot Wheels. Could any place be more fun? If you know of another nostalgic castle filled with Hollywood Christmas magic, you screen it for Jack, he'll project it to me, and we'll tell you where to find Christmas throughout the year.
I tell you what, when Bob started this segment, I was excited about it, but I was thinking, I hope he can find enough places. He's having no trouble, is he? And he's doing a blinding job. I love this segment, I really do. And it's amazing because, you know, Christmas is out there, kids. If you need a bit of Christmas, it's there. You just got to go and find it. Excellent work again, Bob. I've got to plug Bob's podcast. I listened to the latest episode just on Monday. It's called Festive Foreign Film Fans, and they talk about Christmas films. Normally. Because this episode, they talked about Ben-Hur. Yeah. And the reason they were talking about that is because it's often on at Easter. And the first time I ever watched it was an Easter years ago. I say the first time I remember watching it. Because I remember it being on when I was a kid and my mum watching it. But I was too young to watch 3 hours worth of film. And I really enjoyed the episode. And I thought, do you know what? I'm going to get my ass out there and I am going to watch Ben-Hur. So after I finished recording, my kids are away with the wife. They've gone to Sweden to visit her best mate. You don't care about that. But after I finished recording this podcast, I'm going to go and watch Ben-Hur. And if memory serves, I enjoyed it last time. I'm pretty sure I'm going to enjoy it this time. Also, because I got the question right on Bob's podcast from one of the previous episodes, I received a lot of stickers in the post from Bob's show. So there's that as well, kids. So if you're not listening, listen to Festive Foreign Film Fans. It's fantastic. Now, boys and girls, we're doing this.
I'm singing. I'm in a store and I'm singing. I'm in a store and I'm singing.
Hey! There's no singing in the North Pole.
Now, boys and girls, in the last episode, I recommended Father Ted, the sitcom. I think it was the last episode. Might have been the one before. I'm not keeping track. Now, one of the actors in that, a guy called Frank Kelly, he played Father Jack Hackett, who was an old guy that would just sit in his chair the whole time, swearing and drinking. And Frank Kelly actually had a Christmas single that he released back in 1982. Yeah. Now, he was a very accomplished actor. He did a lot of stage stuff. Do you know what? Interestingly, his first movie appearance was with Michael Caine in The Italian Job. Yeah. But he did loads of radio stuff. And he had a character on a radio show called The Glen Abbey Show called Gobne O'Lunacy. Then he played the part of a Colchi, which is a rural buffoon. And he'd do these radio sketches, which typically started with the sound of him putting coins in an old public phone box. And when the call was answered, he'd always say, "Hello, guess who? Is that you, Nuala?" Nuala, I believe, being his girlfriend. Now, this single that he released is called A Christmas Countdown, and it's a comedy monologue based on the song The 12 Days of Christmas. And he plays his character of Gobne O'Lunacy, and he's writing letters to Nuala, his true love or girlfriend, I believe, and each one is like a thank you letter for the present each day. And I could lead you through it, but you know what? I'm going to take a risk here, kids. I'm just going to play the whole thing. And if it gets taken down, then I'll just have to put it back up without the song in there. It's 6 minutes, and I think you might get a kick out of it. If I didn't put it in here, what are the odds of you ever hearing it? Now, the song actually did quite well. It was released originally in Ireland in 1982, and it got to number 8. And then it was released in the UK in 1984, it got to number 26, and it got to number 15 in Australia. Now, when it was released in the UK, he actually performed the single live on Top of the Pops. Now, I've talked about Top of the Pops before. Top of the Pops was the most popular pop music TV show running from the late 60s, was it? Or definitely early 70s, all the way up to the early 2000s. Yeah, and he performs it. Now, the thing is, it's 6 minutes long. So what they did was they started him on the fifth day of Christmas. He did like the first letter was like a summary of the previous 5 days. And then he just did like, the 8 days of Christmas. Yeah. The first clip I saw of this was the 6 minute long video. I don't know where it was performed, but it starts off with him on the phone, and he's on the phone to the chap who played Father Ted in the Father Ted series. Yeah. Like 16 years before Father Ted came out. Thought that was interesting as well. Anyway, I'm going to play the whole song for you now. Here it comes.
Day one. Dear Nuala, thank you very much for your lovely present of a partridge in a pear tree. We're getting the hang of feeding the partridge now, although it was difficult at first to win its confidence. It bit the mother rather badly in the hand. But they're good friends now, and we're keeping the pear tree indoors in a bucket. Thank you again. Yours affectionately, Gubnet O'Lunacy. Day 2. Dear Nuala, I cannot tell you how surprised we were to hear from you so soon again and to receive your lovely present of 2 turtle doves. You really are too kind. At first, the partridge was very jealous and suspicious of the doves, and they had a terrible row on the night the doves arrived. We had to send for the vet. But the birds are okay again, and the stitches is due to come out in a week or two. The vet's bill was £8, but the mother is over her annoyance now, and the doves and the partridge are watching the telly from the pear tree as I write. Yours ever, Gobnet. Day 3. Dear Nuala, we must be foremost in your thoughts. I had only posted my letter when the 3 French hens arrived. There was another sort out between the hens and the doves, who sided with the partridge, and the vet had to be sent for again. The mother was raging because the bill was £16 this time, but she has almost cooled down. However, the fact that the bird's droppings keep falling down on her hair while she's watching the telly doesn't help matters. Thanking you for your kindness, I remain your Gubnet. Day 4. Dear Nuala, you mustn't have received my last letter when you were sending us the 4 calling birds. There was pandemonium in the pear tree again last night, and the vet's bill was £32. The mother is on sedation as I write. I know you meant no harm, and remain your close friend, Gubnet. Day 5. Nuala, your generosity knows no bounds. 5 gold rings. When the parcel arrived, I was scared stiff that it might be more birds, because the smell in the living room is atrocious. However, I don't want to seem ungrateful for the beautiful rings. Your affectionate friend, Gubnet. Day 6. Nuala, What are you trying to do to us? It isn't that we don't appreciate your generosity, but the six geese have not alone nearly murdered the Colin birds, but they laid their eggs on top of the vet's head from the pear tree, and his bill was £68 in cash. My mother is munching 60 grains of Valium a day and talking to herself in a most alarming way. You must keep your feelings for me in check, Governor. Day 7. Nola, we are not amused by your little joke. 7 swans a-swimming is a most romantic idea, but not in the bath of a private house. We cannot use the bathroom now because they have gone completely savage and rush the door every time we try to enter. If things go on this way, the mother and I will smell as bad as the living room carpet. Please lay off. It is not fair, Governor. Day 8. Nola, who the hell do you think gave you the right to send 8 hefty maids a-milk in here to eat us out of house and home? Their cattle is all over the front lawn and has trampled the hill over the mother's rose beds. The swans invaded the living room in a sneak attack, and the ensuing battle between them and the calling birds, turtle doves, French hens and partridge made the Battle of the Somme seem like Wanderley Wagon. The mother is on a bottle of whiskey a day as well as the 60 grains of Valium. I'm very annoyed with you, Governor. Day 9. Listen, you louser. There's enough pandemonium in this place night and day without 9 drummers drumming. While the 8 flaming maids of milking is beating me poor old alcoholic mother out of her own kitchen and gobbling everything in sight. I'm warning you, you're making an enemy of me, Governor. Day 10. Listen, manure face. I hope you will be haunted by the strains of the 10 pipers piping which has sent to torment us last night. They were aided in their evil work by those maniac drummers, and it wasn't a pleasant sight to look out the window and see 8 hefty maids a-milking, pogoing round with the ensuing punk rock uproar. My mother has just finished her 3rd bottle of whiskey on top of 124 grains of Valium. You'll get yours, Governor O'Lone, I say. Day 11. You have scandalised my mother, you dirty Jezebel. It was bad enough to have 8 maids a-milking dancing to punk music on the front lawn, but they've now been joined by your friends, the 11 lords a-leapin', and the antics of the whole lot of them would leave the most decadent days of the Roman Empire looking like outlook. I'll get you yet, you owl bag. Day 12. Listen, slurry head, you have ruined our lives. The 12 maidens dancing turned up last night and beat the living daylights out of the 8 maids a-milking because they found them carrying on with the 11 lords a-leaping. Meanwhile, the swans got out of the living room where they'd been hiding since the big battle and savaged hell out of the lords and all the maids. There were 8 ambulances here last night and the local civil defence as well. The mother is in a home for the bewildered and I'm sitting here up to me neck in birds' droppings, empty whiskey and Valium bottles, birds' blood and feathers, where the flaming cows eats the leaves off the pear tree. I'm a broken man, come to show alone and say.
So either you just heard the song or you just heard nothing, and I'm back. I hope you enjoyed it. I thought it was a bit of fun. Now, the only other thing I want to say about it is, I was actually aware of another version that's very similar to this with the voice of Phoebe Waller-Bridge. Now, if you don't know Phoebe Waller-Bridge, she was in the most recent Indiana Jones film, and she also played the main character in Fleabag, very famous actress she's become now. And she did a version called The 12 Days of Christmas, A Tale of Avian Misery. And it's very similar about how someone's getting sent all these birds and she's not enjoying it at all. Yeah, her one runs for 8 minutes, whereas this one's 6 minutes. I hope you got a kick out of that. I hope you enjoyed it. Now it's time for this. Boys and girls, this episode's recommendation is Tinsel Tunes Podcast. Now you're probably thinking, we know all about Tinsel Tunes Podcast. Yeah, maybe you do, but they're back. Now, I should have said this a couple of episodes ago, because actually their second episode just came out. But, you know, a lot of Christmas podcasts, they don't run all year round. The boys at Tinsel Tunes, they had January off, just like I did. But then late February, they had their first episode of the new one. So it was almost 2 months off they had. Not like me. I'm straight back in the start of February. But yeah, they've done a couple of great episodes. Auld Lang Syne and the most recent one, Good King Wenceslas. You've got to listen to it, because it's great. If you love Christmas, you'll love listening to these boys. It's my friend Scott, you heard earlier, and of course Dwayne, and I've plugged it loads of times. And I'll tell you what, boys and girls, you might not know this. When I first started this podcast, I went like 4 or 5 episodes where I didn't have a single listener, and then I had one listener, and then they disappeared. And then I got a plug on Tinsel Tunes and the floodgates opened and I got all three of my listeners and they're still there to this day. And I have Tinsel Tunes to thank for that. So boys and girls, why don't you thank Tinsel Tunes by going and shoving it in your ears? I'll put the link in the show notes, but to be honest, boys and girls, you should be listening anyway. And that is it for this episode. I really do hope you've enjoyed it. If you want to get in touch, we've got two reasons. One, I want to see how you did in the old Santa banter. Don't worry, Pamela Wootton, I won't be doing it in the next episode. That was just a one-off. I will do it again at some point, but it'll be a little while. I'll just do it sporadically. Yeah, you've got to tell me your score in that. But also, boys and girls, don't forget to send me your ideas for Rob Taylor for how he can raise some charity money at Christmas. Send your ideas in. You can do it. It's easy. Okay, the email address is totalchristmas@gmail.com. The website is totalchristmaspodcast.com. I'll be back again in 2 weeks. But in the meantime, boys and girls, you know I love you. Merry, happy Christmas.
What's going on here?
Merry Christmas, Charlie Brown!